Well, good morning. Good to see everybody today. Do you have a Bible this morning? The book of 1 Thessalonians, chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians, the fifth division, is where we will spend virtually all of our time this morning. And so we'll ask you to open there and be ready to read with us in just a moment or two. And while you're doing that, we welcome all of you. We are so happy that you are with us today. Our building is full of visitors from around the country today because of the events that are going on down the street at Florida College this week with kind of a delayed lecture program this year. And we're very happy to have all of you with us. And so thank you so much for sharing worship with us today. If you're visiting with us via live stream this morning, we're very happy that you are with us as well. And we have folks we know every week from around the country that share worship with us through that medium, and we welcome all of you also. It's great to see everybody. Hope this is a wonderful week. All of you who have come to be involved in the events down the street, we hope it's a tremendous week for you in every way. We love this Sunday because we get to renew acquaintance with so many friends from around the nation, when many of you we meet for the very first time, and that's a very special thing as well, and so we enjoy that much. And on this Sunday, we get to have Todd Dennis lead singing for us, and there's not much better than that, and so we enjoy having Todd. Thank you for being with us. Appreciate Jonathan's good prayer this morning and Carrie's communion meditation. If you're visiting with us and not familiar with us, Jonathan that led our prayer this morning and Carrie, our co-workers here, they are two of the three full-time ministers here, and so we appreciate their good work on our behalf as well. And happy Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms here today. Happy Mother's Day. Hope it's a tremendous day for you in every possible way. And hope you are made to feel very special today. And if your mom is still living, you be sure to tell her today how much you appreciate her and how much you love her. Now, my mom, she has been passed away for 32 years. But my mother-in-law in Athens, Alabama, watches. She's watching this morning. I know she told me this morning she'd be watching. So, Mom, happy Mother's Day. I love you very much. I just got some major brownie points, let me tell you. That was good stuff right there. Happy Mother's Day to all of you. Be sure and make your mom feel very, very special today. It is so good to be with you. And I love this day so very, very much. I was driving to our church building about 2 months ago, and I drove past a little church in our community, and they always change their sign every week to reflect whatever the sermon is going to be on Sunday. And I'm not making this up. 2 months ago, I drove by, and here is what was on their sign. Discouragement, Sunday at 10. I'm not sure that's exactly what they were trying to convey. Because you know what, ladies and gentlemen, we don't need discouragement on Sunday. We get enough of that the other 6 days of the week. If you watch the news consistently, it can be fairly discouraging. It doesn't matter if you listen to the news on the right or on the left. The message is always the same. It never, ever changes. Terrible things are happening. The world is coming to an end. The sky is falling. And it is the fault of the other political party. It never changes. You get too deeply involved in that, and that can be a discouraging thing. The weather can be a discouraging thing. A lot of you have come from the north, and you have navigated your way out of the months of December, January, and February. I remember those months when we lived in Indianapolis. They were brutally cold. They were discouraging. And it wasn't just December, January, and February. It then went into March, April, and May. Here, it's June, July, and August because it's like you're trying to camp on the surface of the sun. And so the weather can be somewhat discouraging. Even when you try to be encouraging, you can make a mistake and it can come out wrong. Did you see on the news, did you see this bulletin board in a middle school? Here's what it said. Now, you can read that one of two ways, right? Yeah, some of you are still going to get it on the way home today, but I'm sure they meant you matter, don't give up. But that's not the direction we typically read, is it? You don't matter, give up. Well, there's a good message for middle school kids right there. Big things can discourage. As Carrie mentioned a moment ago, we are navigating our way out of a pandemic. Maybe it's the death of a loved one. Maybe even on Mother's Day like today. If your relationship with your mom is strained, it can be a very discouraging thing. Little things sometimes discourage. Your favorite team loses a ball game, or you get stuck in traffic somewhere, and those are kind of the nuisance issues that kind of discourage us as well. Fighting and losing a personal battle can be discouraging. Maybe that's an addiction, or maybe it's a broken relationship. There's singles who are discouraged because they are not married, and married couples sometimes who are discouraged because, in fact, they are. And then you try sometimes to to want to encourage and say something kind to your wife. Maybe it's on Valentine's Day that you want to write a verse to them. And so, you know, you have a good verse like Ecclesiastes 9:9. Enjoy life with your wife whom you love. Isn't that beautiful sentiment? That's great sentiment. And then you read the rest of the verse. It says, all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun, your meaningless days. And so even sometimes you can read a text that can discourage. When you think of encouragement, who do you think of in the Bible? Well, for most of us, the answer to that is fairly straightforward. The answer to that for most of us would be a gentleman named Barnabas. Now, that was not his given name. His given name actually was Joseph. But the apostles looked at this man, Joseph, and they looked at his attitude and his disposition, the way that he interacted with others and his view toward life, and they gave him a new name. They gave him the name, Son of Encouragement. You're Barnabas, Son of Encouragement. I would ask you this morning, if somebody were to identify your dominant characteristic and give you a nickname based on that, what would it be? Child of grumpiness. Daughter of grouchiness. Hopefully not. Because God's looking for more children of encouragement. And the fact of the matter is, ladies and gentlemen, that everybody needs a Barnabas in their life. Every one of us need a Barnabas in their life, somebody that unconditionally will love us and build us up. And that's exactly evidently the disposition of this man. You see it on multiple occasions. This was a man who just naturally, it seemed, lived this kind of life. Quick side point here. We typically put Barnabas with another name. We talk about Paul and Barnabas. And you remember in Acts chapter 15, there was an argument between the two. They were divided because Barnabas had been a source of encouragement to John Mark, and he wanted to take John Mark with him again on another missionary journey. But the fact of the matter is that everybody also needs an Apostle Paul. Because in Acts 15, Paul said, nope, we're not going to take him yet. He's got to prove himself a little bit more. Everybody needs an Apostle Paul as well. Somebody who will tell us the unvarnished truth so that we can make corrections in our life, so that we can do and be better. And so everybody needs Barnabas, everybody needs Paul, and then after that correction that Paul gave, everybody needs Barnabas again. They need somebody to encourage him and say, you know what? You can do this. You can make this correction. You can do better, be better. I'm counting on you. I believe that you can be more than you are now. That's what Jonathan was with David. It's what Lois and Eunice were with Timothy. It's what Jesus Christ was with the Apostle Paul. The question is, ladies and gentlemen, can you be that someone? Can you and I be that someone? If I were to ask you this morning, why does this matter to God? And by the way, this does. 109 times in your New Testament, you'll find this word encourage or some variant of it in some way. Now, we're the people who always say that God only needs to say something one time for it to matter. But God said this 109 times. So if I were to ask you this morning, why does this matter so greatly to God? What would you say? I ask you to open a moment ago to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. And here's the verse really that we want to emphasize, although we're going to work our way through the remainder of the chapter. But it begins with this: therefore, encourage one another and build one another up just as you are doing. So encourage each other and build each other up just as you are doing. Now, very important in that verse, I think, is the fact that he says, you know what? You're already doing this. This was not a remedial lesson for these individuals, just like it's not for us. Just as you are also doing. I think we do that here. If I can brag on our congregation for just a second, I think that's one of the things that we do in this church extraordinarily well, that we watch out for each other. We encourage each other. We reach out to each other. During this pandemic, we have done that over and over and over again. So many things have been done under the radar that most will never know about, just doing exactly what this verse says. But again, the question is, why? Why is this so important to God? Well, look at 1 Thessalonians 5 and read with me beginning in verse 9. Listen to what he says. God did not appoint us to wrath, but to obtain salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ. Christ who died for us, that whether we wake or sleep, we should live together with him. Therefore, On that basis, because of that, you should encourage and build up each other. If we were to synthesize verses 9 and 10, I think we'd get this. The Lord Jesus Christ died for us so that we may live together with Him. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up. So, why encourage? Well, because we want to be able, what does He say? Because we want to be able to live with Him. We want people to be able to do that both now and in eternity. It's what we are about insofar as being evangelistic and helping others and encouraging others. And we want that for ourselves as well. And so He says, you know, whether you wake or sleep. Now, in the context, chapter 4 and 15, that's whether you're alive or dead. But let's take that literally. Whether you literally are awake or asleep, whether you're rich or poor, whether you're young or old, whether you're black or white, whether you are rich or poor, it doesn't matter at all. The goal is that we live now and in eternity with Him. And it's interesting, when the Hebrew writer talked about this, he said, I want you to encourage one another daily, as long as it is today. Think about that. As long as it's called today. I want you to encourage each other as long as it's called today. You know what's interesting about that? Yesterday, what did we call it? We called yesterday today. It was today for us. And tomorrow, if we're alive, what will we call tomorrow? We'll say, well, it's today. And then today, what do we call today? Well, Don, we call it today. What's the point of that? The Hebrew writer is saying, look, you need this every single day. Every 24 hours, you need to be renewed and refreshed in this kind of encouragement. This is like manna. You need it every day to sustain life. And so why do this? Well, because again, 1 Thessalonians 5, 9 through 11, because of what the Lord's done for us. But in this verse, He says, so that you won't be deceived by sin and hardened against God. Because the fact is, ladies and gentlemen, we all do better. We all do better when someone is encouraging us and someone's challenging us and motivating us to be more than we are now, to do better and be better, and telling us, encouraging us, that they believe that we can in fact do that. Now, here's what I really want to emphasize for a few minutes this morning. I want to ask, who needs this? Who needs this? And the interesting thing is, we're not left to wonder about that, because in 1 Thessalonians 5, Paul tells us, he doesn't just say in verse 11, I want you to encourage and build up each other just as you are doing. Continue to do that. He doesn't just say that. He says, let me tell you some groups of people who especially need some attention along this line. And let's see if we can't make some applications of that for 2021 in our circumstances as well. Now, here's how he began with that. He began by talking about leaders. And he said, leaders need encouragement. Look at what he said in verse 12. We ask you, brothers, to respect those who labor among you and those who are over you in the Lord, those who admonish you and esteem them very highly in love because of their work. And so he said, leaders need to be encouraged. Ladies and gentlemen, you want to stand out in the crowd in 2021. You want to stand apart and above from others in 2021. I tell you what you do. You be a person that respects authority and those who are in positions of authority. Because authority in every level, in every circumstance, is under assault in American culture. So I want to ask you this morning, how do you treat the leaders in your life? How do you treat the leaders in your life? Let me begin with our young people. Young people, at home, do you respect your mom and dad? Or at school, do you listen to and respect your teachers and your administrators? And young people, when you're on the ball field or you're at the gym, are you speaking with respect to your coaches or to those who are the officials? And for those who are a little bit older, for adults, at work, do you respect your boss or your manager or whatever role that person in authority may fill? Or on the street, do you respect police officers? Or how about this? In your heart, listen to me carefully, in your heart, do you pray for and honor, as Peter commanded us, do you honor the king? Or to use our language, a prime minister, or to bring it to the United States, do you honor and respect and pray for 1 Timothy chapter 2? Do you respect and honor the president, even if he is of another political party? I fear, ladies and gentlemen, there are going to be a great many Christians who one day are going to lose their soul because they have failed this very simple test. And in the church, do you respect your elders, your shepherds, your overseers? And could I say just a word about that? Now, I'm not saying, don't misunderstand me here. I'm not saying the church leaders are perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not saying that elders and preachers and deacons should be put on a pedestal, because we're just ordinary people. We're not perfect. Somebody has well said that in the church, it's not clergy and it's not laity, that in the church, it is in fact clarity. That is, we are all clay in the hands of God. And we're trying to use whatever gifts, whatever talents, whatever abilities God has given us, whatever way God sees fit to mold us. We're just trying to use that to His glory in the kingdom. But in verse 13, he does say that we need to appreciate those who are in positions of leadership, particularly, I would think, our shepherds, our elders, and our overseers. Because while they do a very rewarding work, the fact is they do a very difficult work. Particularly has that been true during the pandemic. Let me say, ladies and gentlemen, to our church family at Temple Terrace, and to the countless people in this building today who are part of other congregations in other parts of these United States, that we owe a debt of gratitude to our elders. Because extraordinary circumstances over the past 15 months have demanded extraordinary decisions. Decisions that elders and shepherds and overseers in a local church have agonized over. And decisions that where they've had to remember that while they love every single soul that is under their charge, they have to make decisions not based on the individual will of one, but they have to make decisions as best they can in the best interest of usually hundreds of congregants whom they lead. And so, ladies and gentlemen, if you're visiting with us today from another part of these United States, I want to encourage you. I want to encourage you to go home. And I want you to encourage your shepherds and tell them that you appreciate them. The members of this church need to do that as well with our shepherds, that you appreciate the fact that they have had a very difficult year. And go home and thank your deacons, just as we should in this congregation, because it has required so much extra of them this year. The things that have to be done to make sure that we are kept safe, that our buildings have been sanitized for months, that communion has been prepared so that we could take it individually, and countless other things that they have done. And ladies and gentlemen, go home and thank your preachers. Now, I'm not saying that to my church family here so that I'll get that, because I get that a lot from this church. But go home and thank your preachers, because I will tell you, for a good while, particularly last year in the month of March, preachers scrambled. We scrambled hard to figure out the best way to teach, and we had to get accustomed to some new technology. We had to teach in some circumstances that were not entirely comfortable. And so go home and do what this passage says. Encourage your shepherds, encourage your deacons, and encourage your preacher when you get home. Such an important thing to do. The Hebrew writer put it this way: have confidence in your leaders and submit to their authority, because they keep watch over you as those who must give an account. Do this so that their work will be a joy and not a burden. That would not be benefit to you. Leaders need encouragement. Uninvolved Christians need encouragement. Uninvolved Christians need encouragement. In fact, Paul said that in verse 14. We urge you, brothers and sisters, admonish the idle. Admonish the idle. Idle is an interesting word here. It really hails from the military realm in the first century. And in a way, it meant to be out of step. But really much more than that, it meant that somehow you're not pulling your weight. You're not doing exactly what you ought to do. that somehow you are slacking behind in what you ought to be doing. And so the writer of Proverbs said, whoever is slack in his work is brother to one who destroys. And the point of it is that if we're not doing our part, then somebody else has to pick up the slack for us. And think about that in regard to the pandemic as well. Oh, it's been easy, hasn't it, to adopt this mindset during the pandemic? Because all of us, to some degree, to some extent, at some point in time, all of us were put on the sidelines just a little bit. And it's easy to stay there. And in particular, I think that's true with worship. Every congregation I've talked to around the country, and my preacher friends around the country, they've all said the same thing, that there's a portion of the members that haven't come back to worship. And we all understand that there are some who just should not yet. They just should not, because they have circumstances, particularly with their health, where they just really as yet shouldn't be around crowds. But we also acknowledge that probably there are some who could be back at worship. But you know, sometimes it's easy to decide that the couch and coffee and pajamas is just an easier way to worship God. And those folks need encouragement. They need to be encouraged to be mindful of how special together is. That nothing takes the place of being together. It's irreplaceable. It's strength-giving. We need to remind them, because there is nothing. I don't want anyone to miss the joy of fellowship or the satisfaction of finding a way to be a participant of the work that we are doing as we serve God and others. I don't want anybody to miss the simple joy of spending time with other Christians. Because here's the truth, ladies and gentlemen. If you want church, if you want your church family to feel like home, then you got to be a part of the family. We all don't have to do the same thing, but we've all got to do something. And so we need to encourage the uninvolved. And third, Paul said we got to encourage those who are timid. We've got to encourage those who are timid. Now, here's how he said that. I want you to encourage the disheartened. Disheartened is an interesting word. Now, you've heard in Bible classes, I know, that the word disheartened literally means small-souled. I want you to think about that. Because Paul says, I want you to encourage those who are of small souls. And it's not that God sees them that way, it's that that's the way they see themselves. They see themselves as individuals with really not much to offer. That really they don't have much to offer, they don't matter very much, they lack confidence about that. And Paul says, you know what, those folks need to be encouraged. They need to be told that everybody matters. That every single person matters. That you're important. You know what, ladies and gentlemen, there are groups in every one of our congregations. It doesn't matter where your church family is in these United States. I will guarantee you there are people in your church who feel small-souled. Now, sometimes that's young people. Sometimes, in particular, it's our middle school kids or our high school kids. And they are trying to do right in a world that makes it so easy to do wrong. And that's, for many of them, that's the environment that they live in 5 days a week. And it's very difficult for them. And they feel sometimes, I'm sure, like they don't matter. I want to tell you, you matter greatly. So proud of our young people who are in middle school and high school who are doing right in spite of how easy it would be to do wrong. They need to be encouraged to continue with that. They need to be encouraged to find their place, their role in our churches. And understand that these young men and women, they make a difference. They have a value. There were things that were done when I was a teenager that I will never, ever, ever forget. There were conversations that were had with me that I will never forget. The first time I ever tried to preach a sermon, I was 15 years old. The first time I ever gave a Wednesday night talk, I was 15 years old. The first sermon that I ever preached was in a little church, and I had driven over, but I didn't have a license. My mom had to drive me, and I had 12 pages of notes, which I presented in 8 minutes flat. Now, every member at Temple Terrace is saying, maybe you could find that outline. We'd like to have that one every now and then, you know? It was worse than horrible. But there was a gentleman in that church. This was 40 years ago. There was a gentleman in that church named Kenneth Franz. I'll never forget him. He was a big man, big, burly man. And I was about this big. All I had was a big mop of floppy hair, which I wish I still had, by the way. And Brother Franz came up to me and he put his arm around me and he pulled me real close. And he said, "Don, you're going to be a preacher one day. And you're going to help people." And he said, "This is the talent God's given you." I've never forgotten that. Never forgotten that. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to be finding those ways for our young people, for our teenagers in particular. And I will tell you the other end of that spectrum. Sometimes it's our senior saints who feel small-souled, who've come by virtue of age or maybe health debilitation to feel like that they don't matter much anymore. You know, oftentimes I say to young people, you need to try to look through the eyes of older people. I tell older people, you need to try to look through the eyes of young people, but it goes both ways. Young people, you need to try as best you can to look through the eyes of those who are older. I mean, what's it like? What's it like to be an older person and look around your workplace where youth is prized and your experience gained over decades is now minimized? What's it like? What's it like to have wept over many a grief and many a grave? What's it like to be alone because the mate of your life has died? What's it like to have that kind of mileage on the odometer of your heart? These wonderful, experienced, insightful, interesting senior saints need to be encouraged as well. Need to encourage those who are timid. And I tell you, who else? Weak people. Weak people need encouragement also. And so Paul just says, help the weak. And that's not a put down. He's not saying to the folks in Thessalonica, you weak people, you know who you are. He's not trying to put them down. It's an acknowledgement that all of us are in that category from time to time. That all of us at some point in time are going to feel that for whatever reason, we're the weak ones right now. And so maybe you're here this morning. You're going through a financial weakness today. Or maybe it's a physical weakness because your health isn't what you'd like to be. Or maybe it's a spiritual weakness. You know, Jude said, look, have mercy on those who doubt. Have mercy on those who doubt. Why would he emphasize that? Well, because for all of us, there are going to be points in time when our faith is under assault. And we wonder and we doubt a little bit. Maybe that's you today. Maybe it was everything that you could do just to get up and come into a building today, because today it's your faith that is weak. Or maybe it's an emotional weakness. Maybe it's an emotional weakness because I've said many times that our lives are not nearly as neat as our appearance would suggest on Sunday morning. You know, years ago it was very popular to say that there's a broken heart on every pew. I never particularly cared for that phrase, but I do believe that while for most of us in this room, it's a time of happiness and joy and fellowship, we do need to be aware of the fact that it's not that way for everybody. There's some who hurt. There's a man who sits in a room like this and his wife has died. And so every time he comes in this building and now he sits alone, his eyes fill with tears. And there are couples on this Mother's Day, who are struggling because they want a child so bad. But they're struggling with infertility, or they're struggling with the fact that they have lost, they've had a miscarriage of a child or children. And today's a hard day. Or there's a man on Father's Day who's angry because his dad was never there for him. Or there's a mom and dad who grieve because their adult son or their adult daughter has left the Lord and broken their hearts. And Paul said those people need to be encouraged. In Matthew 12 and verse 20, there is a prophecy that's quoted in regard to Jesus. And it said about Jesus that a bruised reed he will not break, and a smoking flax he will not quench. And I'm not sure that we have in English an exact idiom that would be comparable to that. But what he's saying, I think, is pretty clear. That a bruised reed he will not break. And so maybe you're here this morning, you feel kind of like the stem of a plant. And beneath you is the soil of your faith that hadn't gone anywhere. And above you is the flower of a productive life that you really do want to live. But for right now, that stem that you are feels like it's bent and about to break in two. And this passage says the Lord doesn't cut you off and say, I'm finished with you. He tries to stand beside you and help you come back to life. And maybe you feel like you're a candle that's flickering and just about to go out. And this verse is saying that Jesus doesn't come and pour water on you and extinguish you and say, I'm done with you. He tries to fan the flame and bring you back to life. And the point that Paul is making in 1 Thessalonians 5 is that we need to be people who do the same. That's what Barnabas did. If I could just go back to him for just a second. Barnabas did that all the time. One of the most notable cases was, we said that there are two names that always go together, right? Paul and Barnabas. You know where that began? That began in Acts chapter 9. Because Saul of Tarsus has been converted. He accepts Christ, but when he tries to join himself to the disciples, the Christians will not accept him. Now, by the way, I mean, we need to be fair about that. There's no condemnation for that. The church is not criticized for not accepting Paul immediately into their fellowship. They acted upon what they knew. All they knew was this was the same guy that they had seen lead their family member and friends away, never to see them return. But you know what Barnabas did? Barnabas took Saul and brought him to the apostles and declared to them how on the road Saul had seen the Lord and spoken to him, and how at Damascus Saul had preached boldly in the name of Jesus. You know what that says? It says that Barnabas took some of his credibility and he gave it to someone else. How encouraging do you suppose that was? And here's the bottom line, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody needs this. Everybody needs encouragement. Be patient with everyone. Everybody needs encouragement. And so today, when you leave here and you go somewhere to eat lunch, you go to a restaurant, it's going to be packed because it's Mother's Day, and your server is going to be harried because everybody wants their food 5 minutes ago, and they're all mad because they had to wait a little while. And so maybe that server is going to be kind of a child of grumpiness. That person needs your encouragement. You know why? Because they may be going through something in their life that you can't even imagine. Every person that comes in this building should find encouragement. Several years ago, I read a little saying, and I don't know who said this, and I really wish I did so I could give them credit. So I'll give credit to the most prolific and famous author of all time, Anonymous, who said, every number has a name, every name has a story, and every story matters to God. And so the people who come in this building, they are worthy of our encouragement. Paul said, here's the tone that we're to have in life. Rejoice always, pray without ceasing, everything give thanks. This is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. Who wouldn't want to be a part of a church like that? Who wouldn't want to be a part of a group of people who do that? So let's just end and wrap up with this morning real quickly. How do we do that? Well, I'm just going to give you two or three things from the verse, and then the lesson's yours. Here they are. Number one, we can do that through spoken word. We know that Solomon said that the tongue has the power of life and death. And so we need to be careful about what we say and how we say it. You can encourage through spoken words. You know, ladies and gentlemen, there are some individuals, when you see them walking toward you, you brace yourself. I'll guarantee you've got people in your life like that. There's some people, when I see them walking toward me, not in this church, don't want you to think I'm talking about that. But there are some people that I've associated with that when they're walking toward me, I brace myself because I know that what's going to come out of their mouth is not going to be encouraging. But others, there you just want to embrace. You don't have to brace yourself. You want to embrace. You want to hug them because you know that whatever they're going to say to you, man, it's going to be good. It's going to build you up. It's going to encourage you. It's going to bless you in some way. That needs to be us. And secondly, through written words. Because what did Paul say? I want you to have this letter read to all the brothers and sisters. It is still true that there is nothing like a handwritten note, because that means that somebody has taken time, somebody's gone to some effort, somebody has given thought, and somebody has done that for you. It only takes a few minutes, but I tell you, it makes a tremendous difference for others. And through physical touch, appropriate physical touch. I mean, look at what Paul said. Greet all the brethren with a holy kiss. Now, there are places, of course, where brethren do that. You go to Italy, and that's the way brethren greet each other. They'll kiss you on both cheeks. You go to Ethiopia, and the brethren will hug you, and they'll kiss you three times on the shoulders, a sign of respect. But we shake hands with people. We pre-pandemic and post-pandemic, we hug people. We either shake hands or we hug. And it's our way of giving appropriate physical touch, because that means something. We've had this practice in our churches for generations, you know, that the preacher typically will stand in the back and kind of shake folks out. I had an intern once who said, "Why? I don't really want to do that. Why do I need to do that? Because that's just a tradition. I really don't want to do that." And I said, "Well, first, you're going to do that." This was not Matt, by the way. I looked over here and I looked at Matt when I said that, and I thought, boy, that's bad. That was not Matt that said that. Now, I did have to say to Matt sometimes, "Well, you're going to do that." But it wasn't about that. But I told this young man, I said, "Look, first, there's nothing better than speaking to your brethren and smiling with them and connecting with them. There's nothing better in the world than that." I said, "But secondly, there's some of your brethren that when they come out and you shake hands with them or you hug them, particularly sometimes with our senior saints, that may be about the only physical touch that they'll have with another human being that week." No wonder Paul said, "Greet all the brethren with a holy kiss." An appropriate hug, a handshake, an arm around the shoulder of somebody who's hurting or grieving in some way. It just matters. And then through simple acts of kindness and service. One of the most telling statements about Jesus was that he just went about doing good. What a great statement that is. He just went about doing good. What a great statement that is. The best encourager of all time. Look how 1 Thessalonians 5 ends. "Now may the God of peace himself sanctify you completely and make your whole spirit and soul and body be kept blameless at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. He who calls you is faithful. He will surely do it." It's Paul ending that book by saying, look, this is what God and Jesus do. We're asking you to encourage and build up, because that's what God and Jesus do. You've listened so well this morning. I thank you so very much for that. Just one more minute. One of the most famous of Aesop's fables is the story of the treasure in the vineyard. If you YouTube that, you'll find all kinds of little kids' videos that have been made to tell that story, because it's such a good story. It's one of Aesop's fables, and the story goes that there was a gentleman who owned a vineyard, and he had two sons, and they had both been born with a lazy bone, and so they really didn't want to work. And the dad would say, "Come and help me in the vineyard," and they would just say, "Dad, you know farming better than we do, and you're better at it than we are, and so you go ahead and do that, and we'll do something else." And now he's about to die, and so he calls the two boys, and he says, "In my vineyard I have buried a treasure for you, but you will have to dig and work to find it." And so when he passed, they both began to dig, and they dug, and they dug, and they dug, and they dug, and they dug. They didn't find any treasure, but according to the fable, as they turned over the soil, it was able to receive the rain and the nitrogen and the nutrients from the rain, and the crop produced. And from the crop, because they had turned the soil, they got treasure. The point of that little story is that treasure's everywhere. Ladies and gentlemen, treasure's everywhere in our life. Your wife, your mom today, is treasure. Your dad's treasure. Your children are treasure. Your grandchildren are your treasure. The people you work with are treasure. The people you live by, they are treasure in the eyes of God. The people in your church family are treasure. And for their sake, we've got to be Barnabas. We've got to be a child of encouragement. Because Paul said that'll make a difference for today. But you know what? Even more so, it might make a difference for eternity because of you. But you know what? It has to begin as it did for all of us. Because we all began the same way. We all took the same initial step. And that was in the water of baptism. And if that's your need today, or if you need to come home to your God, this invitation's for you. Let's stand.